Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Rich Man, Poor Bank, What the Banks Don't Want You to Know About Money by Mark J. Kwan is a personal finance and financial education book focused on the relationship between ordinary consumers, banks, and wealth building. Its central purpose is to challenge the assumption that mainstream banking advice is neutral or designed primarily for the benefit of customers. Kwan presents banks as profit-seeking institutions whose products, loan structures, and financial habits can keep people dependent on wages, debt payments, and conventional savings behavior. The book belongs to the practical money education category rather than academic economics, and it is written for readers who feel they were never taught how money works in school. Its emphasis is not on complex technical analysis, but on reframing everyday financial decisions, especially saving, borrowing, home buying, and investing. The book stands out through its direct criticism of standard financial advice and its focus on financial intelligence as a tool for personal independence. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, bank incentives are presented as different from consumer wealth goals. A core theme of Rich Man, Poor Bank is the idea that banks should not be understood as neutral guides to wealth. The book frames banks as businesses that earn revenue from deposits, loans, fees, interest spreads, and long-term customer dependence. This does not require portraying every banking service as harmful. Rather, the point is that a bank benefits when customers repeatedly borrow, maintain balances, and use financial products under rules the institution controls. Kwan uses this incentive gap to encourage readers to ask who profits from a financial decision before accepting it as responsible advice. The reasoning is concrete: a product that appears safe or normal from the customer side may also be structured to produce predictable income for the lender or institution. This perspective helps explain why the book questions passive trust in banking recommendations. Its practical implication is that consumers need to evaluate banking tools as tools, not as complete financial plans. Mortgages, savings accounts, credit products, and investment channels can serve useful purposes, but the book argues that users should understand their costs, trade-offs, and opportunity costs before letting those products define their financial lives. Secondly, the book treats financial illiteracy as a structural advantage for institutions. Kwan places significant emphasis on the claim that many Americans were never taught how money actually works. This educational gap is presented not simply as a personal weakness, but as a structural condition that benefits financial institutions. If people do not understand interest, leverage, taxes, inflation, asset ownership, and the difference between income and wealth, they are more likely to follow familiar instructions without comparing alternatives. The book, therefore, treats financial education as a defensive skill as well as a wealth-building skill. Its argument is that conventional schooling may prepare people to earn wages, but it often leaves them unprepared to analyze the systems that shape their financial outcomes. This theme gives the book a broader social angle. Poor money decisions are not always caused by laziness or lack of discipline, but by missing information and inherited assumptions. The practical value of this idea is that readers are encouraged to replace shame with inquiry. Instead of asking only how to save more, they are pushed to ask how money moves, how banks profit, how debt can either trap or serve the borrower, and how financial rules reward different types of behavior. Thirdly, conventional advice is questioned when it ignores timing and opportunity cost. One of the book's distinctive concerns is its challenge to familiar financial rules that are often repeated without enough context. The example associated with the author's message is the idea of waiting to accumulate a large down payment before buying a home. Kwan's broader point is not that every reader should rush into property ownership or ignore risk. Rather, he argues that advice can become misleading when it treats a rule of thumb as universally correct while ignoring market movement, inflation, rent costs, lost investment time, and personal circumstances. This is an opportunity cost argument. Money held for a future milestone may provide safety, but the delay can also have a price. If asset values rise faster than savings, or if the saver misses other ways to use capital productively, the book encourages readers to test common advice against real conditions instead of treating it as moral instruction. That approach is useful because many personal finance rules sound prudent in isolation, but change meaning when interest rates, housing prices, taxes, wages, and alternative investments are considered together. The book's value here is in teaching skepticism toward formulas that appear simple but may not fit actual economic conditions. Fourthly, wealth building is framed as understanding assets rather than merely storing cash. Rich Man, Poor Bank contrasts simple saving with a more active understanding of wealth creation. The book's premise suggests that keeping money inside conventional banking habits is not the same as building durable financial independence. This theme rests on a familiar but important distinction in personal finance. Cash reserves may provide liquidity and security, but long-term wealth usually depends on owning or controlling assets that can appreciate, generate income, or provide strategic leverage. Kwan's emphasis on learning how money works points readers toward evaluating investments, borrowing decisions, and ownership structures with greater intention. The book does not need to reject saving to make this argument. Instead, it questions whether saving alone is enough when inflation, taxes, and institutional incentives can reduce purchasing power over time. The concrete reasoning is that people who only accumulate cash may remain dependent on earned income, while people who understand assets may create financial options beyond wages. This theme is especially relevant for readers who have followed basic advice but feel little progress. The book pushes them to examine whether their money is simply being preserved inside the banking system or being deployed in ways that can expand future choices. Lastly, the accessible style makes complex money systems easier to question. The book appears to be written for a broad audience rather than specialists, and that accessibility is part of its function. Banking, taxes, debt, mortgages, and investing can seem technical enough that many people defer to professionals without understanding the underlying mechanics. Kwan's approach is to reduce the intimidation factor by using direct language and a provocative central claim. Banks know things about money that consumers are rarely taught. The benefit of this style is that it can make readers more willing to examine subjects they previously avoided. The limitation is that a strongly framed critique can simplify a complicated system if readers treat it as a complete substitute for individualized planning. The best way to read the book is therefore as an entry point into financial questioning, not as a one-size-fits-all instruction manual. Its accessible style matters because financial literacy often fails when explanations become too abstract or technical. By focusing on everyday decisions and institutional incentives, the book gives readers a practical vocabulary for asking better questions of banks, advisors, lenders, and themselves. That makes its simplicity a strategic feature, provided readers continue to verify details before making major financial moves. In conclusion, Rich Man, Poor Bank is best suited for readers who want a direct, plain language challenge to the financial habits they inherited from school, family, employers, or banks. It will be most useful to people who feel they have followed ordinary advice, but still lack clarity about debt, saving, home buying, investing, and the role banks play in shaping financial behavior. The practical benefit is not a guaranteed formula for wealth, but a sharper habit of questioning incentives, costs, and alternatives before accepting standard recommendations. Intellectually, the book encourages readers to see personal finance as a system of relationships between consumers, lenders, assets, taxes, and institutions rather than as a set of isolated budgeting tips. Compared with many introductory personal finance books, it stands out through its adversarial focus on banking incentives and its insistence that financial education must include the mechanics of how institutions profit. It is less conventional than books centered mainly on frugality, budgeting discipline, or retirement account accumulation. Readers seeking academic neutrality or detailed technical modeling may need additional sources, but those looking for a clear starting point in financial skepticism will find its positioning useful. Its strongest contribution is making ordinary readers more alert to the difference between using banks and being guided by them. If you would like to support Mark J. Kwan, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around!